This morning, I'm going to talk about interconnectedness, how interconnectedness is something that we can all experience. It's not just an idea or just philosophy. It's something that we can deeply experience for ourselves. And I'm going to talk about an impediment I have found to being able to deeply experience interconnectedness. So this idea that everything is connected, it's pretty basic in Buddhism. And if you've been around a lot, you're probably very familiar with it, but perhaps it's a new idea to you. I'll just talk about it very briefly. There are two perspectives from which we can look at our reality, or perhaps it's our perceived reality. And we call these form and emptiness. There is form, the way of looking at the world in which it is made up of solid objects, individual people, things that are separated from each other. And then there is the aspect of emptiness, where things don't have an independent existence. From this point of view of emptiness, things are empty. That doesn't mean they don't exist. They are empty of a separate self. This cup does not exist on its own. It's part of everything that it is. Saying it's a separate thing from this point of view is something that we do kind of arbitrarily. The same with individual human beings. So you can call this emptiness, but interconnectedness is a much more positive way of stating this. Everything exists, no separate self, but together it is all here, and it's quite beautiful. And if it's interconnected, I am you, and you are me. And from this understanding arises deep compassion. And there's that question that's bothered me for a long time. If everything is empty, why do we have compassion? Well, if we call it interconnectedness, it's pretty easy to see why compassion arises from it, is consistent from it. We're all interconnected. We're all the same. Your well-being is as important to me as my well-being. And a very important principle of interconnectedness is that nothing is excluded from it. We can't get the good stuff and push away the bad stuff and be happy that way. From the conventional point of view, the world of form, sometimes that works, sometimes that's necessary. But from the ultimate point of view, the interconnectedness point of view, nothing can be excluded. And one way that's illustrated is the idea of Indra's net, which many of you are familiar with. Kind of a metaphor, there is this endless, infinite net with a jewel at each intersection in the net, and every jewel reflects every other jewel in the infinite net. So no jewel can be left out. Every jewel is reflected. So if we don't accept and see everything in the universe, we can't have a true picture of reality. Things will be out of balance. The third patriarch, Sung San, said in the 6th century, to come directly into harmony with this reality, just simply say when doubts arise, not to. In this not to, nothing is separate, nothing is excluded. And Hongzhe in the 12th century said, senses and objects merge. That is, no separation between the perceived and the perceiver. Principle and wisdom are united. When self and the other are the same, mind and dharmas are one. When you face what you have excluded and see how it appears, you must quickly gather it together and integrate with it. So Hongzhe is telling us what to do if we've excluded something. Gather it together and integrate with it. So excluding nothing and no one means acknowledging that we have something of everyone in us. And this can be very hard. There's that really well-known poem by Thich Nhat Hanh called Please Call Me by My True Names. And it's about identifying with even the most difficult people. And he talks about a pirate off the coast of Vietnam who did really horrible things. And he talks about how if he were the pirate, if he had been born and raised in the same conditions as that pirate, he probably would be that pirate. He needs to understand that that awful action is something that's in us too. This is very, very difficult to do. But no one is excluded, even the worst of the worst. Of course, we don't accept their actions. We try to prevent such actions. We try to prevent them from doing this. But we can work on accepting the worst. And traditional metta practice does this. In traditional metta practice, there's one way to do it in which you start with bringing sort of loving energy to yourself. And then you bring it to a person you love very much. And then you bring it to someone that you're neutral toward. And finally, you bring it to someone who is very, very difficult for you. And that's a way to work on this particular impediment to compassion. Our natural human tendency to identify enemies and wall ourselves off from them and say we are different from them. So when we try to exclude some things from Indra's net, when we don't see some of the jewels, life gets out of balance. And that prevents us from completely feeling and completely sharing the universal love that arises from seeing interconnections. It prevents us from loving and being loved. But that impediment is not my main subject today. In my years of teaching, and in my years of working on my own stuff, I've identified another impediment to accepting love without excluding things. And I really do think that this is the biggest impediment, not for everybody, but for so many of us, it is. And I think it happens a lot in our society, maybe not in all societies, certainly ours. And that impediment is that we so easily exclude ourselves from being recipients of this compassion. And that's what I'd like to talk about in my remaining time this morning. And what does it look like to exclude ourselves? Well, we may have the greatest compassion for the people we love, neutral people, maybe even people who are very difficult. But something in us says, but me, I have to be held to a different standard. I'm just terrible. Does this sound familiar at all? I'm such a problem. I'm so selfish. I'm so imperfect. I need to be really hard on myself. I need to be guarded somehow. If I let down that guard and just kind of accept universal love, something bad's going to happen here. Do you see the imbalance of that? You see how ridiculous that is on the surface? I'm somehow different. I'm somehow worse than everyone else. So bad that I need a special standard. So, where does this come from? If indeed it exists for you, or maybe you've got just a little bit of it. I don't know. Maybe it's ultimately not so important where it came from, but there are some possibilities. Maybe someone in your life told you, indicated to you somehow that you weren't worthy of love. Maybe you had a really difficult person in your life. There could be societal factors. We get messages based on things like race, gender, body type, all kinds of things where we get feeling put down. It may be a misguided idea that putting ourselves down somehow helps others. If I can just be really hard on myself, then I will really be able to serve other people well. I'll always put them first. I'll always put myself last. Or maybe we just learn that we get results that way. We kind of use shame when we're young. We do this for the first time. We give ourselves a good talking to when we say, "You're no good, and that's why you have to work so hard on this." But regardless of where it comes from, do you see how very helpful that it is not? The idea that hurting yourself can help others. You can't extend full love to the world and exclude yourself. So you're not helping if you're excluding yourself. What harms you harms others. If you're hurting yourself, you're hurting the world because you're part of the world. For example, maybe you work yourself to the bone serving others. You work yourself so hard, you end up getting sick and you can't help them anymore. Or an extreme case, people can open themselves to harm by excluding themselves from universal love. They can accept harm that they shouldn't accept. So the essential thing is to accept love for yourself. You can't properly do this practice. You can't properly help others without being at ease with who you are. So, love for yourself and forgiveness. These two things go together. Forgiveness. How do we do this? Well, that's what I'd like to talk about. There are some things here that I've said in talks before, but it's been a while. I've said some of these things to individuals because it becomes a recurring theme. But for many of you, I think this will be quite new. If you've heard it before, I beg your indulgence, but it's so important. I think we can hear it again and again. So the most superficial way to look at how to do this, but it's still helpful, is to convince yourself cognitively with your thinking mind of the wisdom of accepting love. You say it doesn't do anyone any good to dwell on past mistakes or failures. You do want to be honest about mistakes and failures, and I'll talk more about that later. But what we're going for here is an honest assessment of who we are. Just an honest assessment. That's all. We've made mistakes, yes, maybe bad ones. I certainly have. But they don't entirely define us. We are not the worst thing we ever did. To focus on that worst thing and say it defines who we are is just cruel and it's inaccurate. We need to balance that with the good things we've done, with our great effort. So I suggest as a first step, if this is something you want to pursue, if you believe me that you need to be at ease with yourself, then I suggest as a first step, you do an honest inquiry into who you are with full attention to the positive things. That you come back to that when you're feeling low. And I do this myself, and I think I've gotten better at it. In my position here, I need to do this. How can I love and guide others if I can't be at ease with myself? So I keep working on it because, as I said, I think it's about the hardest thing. Something in here says, no, you can't do that. It's almost like a survival mechanism or something. It's like we're hardwired. It's like, don't let your guard down. You'll get in trouble. So maybe that's what it is. If I'm hard on myself, I'll get results and I'll survive. There are lots of survival mechanisms that go too far and get us in trouble. Fight or flight kicks in at inopportune times. Anxiety protects us up to a certain point, but then it goes too far. But with Zen practice, change is possible. A deep rewiring can occur. And that's why I've devoted my life to Zen practice rather than anything else. There are innumerable things I could be doing to try to make the world better and to try to heal myself. But I have chosen this practice because I have seen how we can change in the deepest way, beyond words. Those mechanisms that seem automatic, we can actually find them and reverse them. Something clicks when you let go of all conscious thought. So I can't really provide instructions on how to do that. Maybe if it were the fifth or sixth day of a retreat, I could do that when people's minds are very quiet, try to talk you through it. But here in a Sunday talk, I cannot say in a precise way sort of how you do that deep rewiring. What I can do is talk about some ways that you can talk to yourself to point yourself in that direction. And then it's up to you to find that really deep place. And the main principle, the one I've used before, I call this principle, my grandma was right about me. My grandma was right about me. Maybe you get that. Maybe you know where I'm going here and I don't have to explain the whole thing. But I will. It's about accepting unconditional love. So I'm going to talk about my grandma, Grandma Carpenter. Her name was Celia. I think she was born in 1900. She had an eighth grade education. She lived on a series of farms, little farms, her whole life, really poor, really lived off the land. Until when she got really quite old, she and my grandpa moved to town. And after they moved to town, my brother Jim and I, we worked at a local nursery, we worked with plants, and we got an hour lunch break. And so once a week, we would go to her house. We had this standing invitation to go to her house for lunch. And she always made two pies, which was really good. My Grandpa Bob, that's what we called him, Grandpa Bob, he pulled us aside one day and he said, I'm so glad when you boys come over because it's the only time I ever get a decent meal. So, you know, they always did what was best for us. they always save the best for us and refuse to even hint that it was a problem for them. My grandpa kind of let it slip that one time, you know, kind of a little view into the sacrifices they were making. But that's just a little example of what she was like. The thing is, I always knew that she loved me unconditionally. Unconditionally. I always knew that my whole life. I mean, she would discipline me. I would stay with her for weeks at a time, you know, so she would discipline me and everything. But I always knew she was okay with who I am. And she thought I was great. She always said, Teddy, you should go on one of those game shows. You're so smart. Because in her world, that's what smart people did. They went on game shows. I never did that, but I appreciated the sentiment. So when I'm down, I think of that unconditional love. I don't really think of it. I let it in. I feel it. I let it kind of wash over me. And I do my best to accept it, to honor my grandma by doing what she wanted the most for me, which was for me to be happy. That's what she wanted. The best thing I could do for her is to accept that and be happy myself. She wasn't wrong about me. I have a good heart. She thought my good heart defined me. I choose to believe her. So that's what you can do. You can think of someone in your life who has given you unconditional love, and you can practice accepting it. You can honor that person by accepting it. And you can find someone. Not everyone has or had a grandparent like that. Some folks maybe never even really knew their grandparents. But surely you can find someone, a teacher or a parent or a friend or an aunt or uncle. Or if that's too complicated, you can picture the Buddha, the Bodhisattva of Great Compassion, Avalokiteshvara, Kuan Yin. Accept their infinite love. Work on that. Or a similar exercise is pick someone for whom you have unconditional love. And it could be a child, could be a grandparent or a brother or sister, could be a baby, could be your dog or your cat or your iguana. And in meditation or just in a quiet state of mind, you can extend that love to them. And finally, bring it back to yourself, because it's the same thing. It's the same thing. You can bring it back to yourself. You can receive it. Giver, receiver, and gift. Those differences go away. You're part of it. You're part of it. Let it in. And with a strong meditation practice, you can learn in meditation to catch yourself when you're operating in that way, when you're repeating that old story, I'm no good, people won't love me. And you can intervene and you can start to build the new story. And you can do this 1,000 times. And you can do this 10,000 times. Wear down that old story, that old tired story that you've been dragging around. You can wear it down. Take your place in the universe where you belong, with all other beloved creatures, not putting yourself above others, but taking your place with them. Only by taking your place with them can you truly help them. So, a couple more things about this practice. It's good to have the help of a teacher when doing this. There may be a hard place in here or someplace else. It may be really hard. It may not yield easily. It may not be easy to approach. You may not know how to do it. Tears may be involved in this process. A teacher, a therapist, an understanding person. You can get help. And I have to add one little, warning about self-acceptance. We can't let it, whatever you do, do not say, oh my goodness, I am so bad at self-acceptance. I am a terrible self-acceptor. Just stop. Just don't go there, okay? Don't do it that way. And then finally, when I say, please accept your basic goodness, and please don't be so hard on yourself, and please forgive yourself for your mistakes, I, of course, don't mean to gloss over or ignore your mistakes or to just go on doing damage and going on your merry way. Of course not. Because we often talk in Buddhism about fearlessly facing our own mistakes, fearlessly facing our own difficult stuff. It is part of the process. If you've read Pema Chodron, she's just all about this, being a spiritual warrior and fearlessly being present with your own shortcomings. And all that still applies. We can be honest about our mistakes and our unskillful actions. We can have full acceptance of them. We can vow to do better. But we don't need to do more than that. Let's not unnecessarily add to the story. Let's not dwell on it. Let's not refuse to see the positive side. Let's not consign ourselves to hell, okay? And I work on this myself. I need to be careful about this. You know, as guiding teacher, I'm in a position of authority. I make decisions that really affect people. I can't ignore the reality of that. And we have this tradition in Zen of kind of elevating the teacher, and all of this could be kind of a dangerous combination. So I need to constantly examine my own behavior. I need to see my mistakes. I need to own up to them. Because if I start thinking, ooh, I'm really something, I could do a lot of damage. Fortunately, I seem to get frequent reminders that I'm not really something, and I'm grateful for that. Sometimes initially, no, but in the end, yes. But from the perspective of interconnectedness, of not excluding anything, I can do both. I can examine my behavior, take care to do the right thing, own up to mistakes, not get a big head, while not letting that honest review tip over into some kind of self-hatred or something. I can accept and deal with my shortcomings while also taking my place in this loving universe alongside all creatures deserving of love. I can be at ease. I can be at ease. At least I can work on that. And I'd like to end with a brief guided meditation. And as I said, there's a metta meditation that begins with love for myself, then a person I love very much, then a neutral person, then a difficult person. And I think the idea there is that it's easiest to start with kind of our own self-interest and then work our way out. But it's hard for some people to start with the self. Sometimes that's the hardest part, maybe for reasons I've identified. So I'm going to reverse it a little bit, and I'm going to start with all beings. So for this guided meditation, please settle in, sit up straight if you can, and close your eyes most of the way. Take a deep breath. Settle into your breathing. Take a moment to feel what it feels like to be sitting here. And just take in my words. May all beings feel the joy of interconnectedness, love, and acceptance. May those I love, those closest to me, feel the joy of interconnectedness, love, and acceptance. May all of those whom I don't know feel the joy of interconnectedness, love, and acceptance. May those who cause harm feel the joy of interconnectedness, love, and acceptance. And may they cease causing harm. May I take my place with all beings and feel the joy of interconnectedness, love, and acceptance. May I take my place with all beings and feel the joy of interconnectedness, love, and acceptance. May I take my place with all beings and feel the joy of interconnectedness, love, and acceptance. That was the bell. Thank you very much.